Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the history of silver right after this. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Now, back in 1880, Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. And Swinton outraged all of his colleagues by replying that there is no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now, you know it and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now, you know it and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Now, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program and this New World Order, the men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers, the Bushes, the Bundys, the Carnegies, and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend it's time for us to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists and philosophers, these preachers and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and to survive this New World Order and this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Global 2000 and Bible prophecy and this New World Order, why don't you call and order our free 4-hour compact disc package. Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. All right, once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about silver. I gave you the first two installments here on the history of silver. Part one, metal of the moon. Part two, the great build. And now we're up to inventories are gone. The inventories of silver have now shrunk to the point where there's now more gold in the world for sale than there is silver. In theory, all of the gold in the world is in a pile. It's in somebody's hands. Somebody's got it someplace. And it's for sale. Silver is a little different commodity. Silver is used in a number of industrial applications, such as photography, or it used to be. Now it's used in clothing. It's a disinfectant. It's used in medicine. It's used in nanotechnology, computers, electric circuit boards, and so on. And when it's used there, there's a certain amount of it that's recovered, and there's a certain amount of it that's lost forever. The cost of recovering $30 worth of silver out of a computer, for instance, may be worth going after. But for the small amount of silver that's put into, let's say, a pair of clothes or a pair of pants, the amount of silver is not worth recovering. And 1,200 tons of silver per year are put into clothes, and it's lost forever. Now, on the world's metal exchanges, it's reported that there's about 600 million ounces of silver for sale. That sounds like a lot. But on the world's metal exchanges, there are about 2 billion ounces of gold for sale. Now, silver appears in the world's crust 17 times more often than does gold. So therefore, there should be 17 times more silver for sale. For instance, if there's 2 billion ounces of gold, there should be 34 billion ounces of silver for sale, and there isn't. That's the kicker, there isn't. Now, that doesn't mean that there's a shortage of silver, nor that anybody has failed to deliver on a silver contract or a futures contract yet. But all of us who are watching the markets are waiting for that day to occur, and it's bound to occur. We don't know if it's going to be next week, next month, or next year. We've been watching this for 30 years. We all know, all of us that watch metals and the metals markets know, that silver is going to fail first, and it's going to fail more likely than not on the COMEX in New York. Of course, it could fail in London or Tokyo or someplace else, but the COMEX in New York is the market that all of us are watching. And we know that because silver and gold have both been sold out into the future in futures contracts 15 years into the future. Put another way, what we're practicing here is a fractional reserve juggling of the inventory. It's a fractional reserve that we're dealing with here. In other words, there's 600 million ounces out there, and we use, or we mine about 600 million ounces a year, and we use that. And so what's being mined and what's being used is just about in equilibrium. But we have sold this in future contracts to people. There are people out there that are holding pieces of paper, and it says that I have 1,000 ounces of silver in somebody's warehouse. And in that warehouse, there's more than 1,000 ounces. Hell, there's probably 1,000,000 ounces. But there are 10 million ounces of paper outstanding against that 1,000,000 ounce that's in the warehouse. So as long as you people out there demand 1,000 ounces here and 1,000 ounces there, there's no problem. We can meet that. Because we've got a fraction of the reserve, and we've got that in physical inventory, and we can meet these demands. Now, 18% of the people who deal in metals take physical possession, and 82% take pieces of paper. And the way the game is played is fairly simple. You call your broker, could be your stock broker. In our region, it's called Stifel Nikolaus. And you place a futures order. Now, assuming you have an account, and assuming that you've got money in the bank, they simply ask you for a check. You've got an account. And so you call up at 10 o'clock this morning and you say, I want to buy silver. They simply look at the price and they sell it to you at that price, and then they tack on their commission. And you've got a futures contract. They'll send you a bill. You write them a check. You send them the check. They send you a piece of paper that says that 1 year from now, let's say next July of 2010, you've got 5,000 ounces of silver due you. Now, you don't pay for the whole 5,000 ounces up front. You just pay 10%. So you pay 10% of the 5,000 ounces, which is, let's say, $15. So 10% of the $15, 150 times 5,000 ounces. And so you write your check and you send it in. Now, assuming that the price of silver doesn't go down, but it goes up to $16, you've made money. You can sell that contract at any time between now and next year and take your profit. That's what most people are doing. They're speculating. It's a gamble. They're gambling. I prefer the crap table. Some people prefer the metals market. Some people prefer stocks. Other people buy bonds. You know, they're all gamblers. They're not investors. They're gamblers. They call themselves investors, but they're not investing. They're gambling. That's the bottom line. And in the metals market, it's I think the third largest market in the world. If you were to take a look at how much money is bought, sold, and traded in these metals markets, you know, palladium, platinum, gold, silver, copper, and so on. The London Metals Exchange in London does $10 billion a day. That's more than $3.5 trillion a year, and that's just one market. Now, it's not bigger than derivatives, but it's bigger than the stock market. Metals is a bigger market than stocks. And it's in the trillions of dollars a year. That's not bad, you know, for a barbaric relic of the past, if you'll stop and think about it. These metals over here, bought, sold, and traded. They're bought, sold, and traded on futures contracts. Nobody ever takes possession of the metal. It's sitting over here in warehouses and stockyards and so on. And in some cases, people buy stocks in mining companies, which means they're really buying this metal in the ground. It hasn't even been mined yet. Now, gold is mined at the rate of about 2,500 tons per year. There's 32,000 ounces in a ton, so it's 2,500 times 32,000 ounces. That's how much gold there is being mined every year, round numbers. Silver, they're mining about 600 million ounces a year, quite a bit more. It's around 18,000 tons, as I recall. But it's being used up. It's used up every year in clothes and nanotechnology and so on. And what's happened over the years is that both silver and gold have been sold out into the future in these futures contracts by about 15 years. So put another way, if everybody said, give me physical possession, somebody's going to get physical possession today and somebody's got to wait 15 years. And that's just the bottom line. Unless you could juice up production and get production twice as high and cut the time in half. So tuck it away in your heart that if you have a piece of paper that says you've got so much gold or silver or platinum or copper or something else in somebody's warehouse, you need to understand that they don't have all of that copper, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not sitting there in the warehouse. Not for everybody. There's a bunch there. And as long as everybody has confidence in the system, and as long as the system is able to deliver the physical property when it's demanded, which they've been able to do so far. But you see, those of us that watch these markets, we take a look at this and we say, well, 18% is physical, 82% is being traded on paper. In a crisis, the COMEX will not be able to pay. In fact, the COMEX right now is borrowing gold and silver from around the world in order to make those payments, to make the payments. Now, that tells us that they're out. They've run out, and they're scrambling now to meet demand. And as the recession gets deeper, as the depression takes on new meaning, more and more people are demanding physical possession, which is the purpose for our program here today. It's to alert you to the fact that if you don't already have physical possession, it could well be that you're not going to get physical possession. That's the bottom line. Not everybody is going to get physical possession of their gold and silver. When the run is on, and a run on the bank, a run on the metals markets begins when some market somewhere in the world is unable to meet physical demand. Now, we thought we had reached this a few months back when we ran into a shortage of silver. It lasted for about 60 days, and then silver loosened up, and now it's available again. Now, they didn't quite fail to meet, but they're behind. I just read an international forecaster the other day that some of these warehouses are in the process of delivering April demand. Well, that's 90 days ago. So what that tells us, that a lot of warehouses, when you make demand, you want physical delivery, it may take 90 to 120 days for you to get physical delivery. Uh-oh. That sends a signal to us, you know, hey, this isn't good. And that's because in times past, the ordinary delivery time is about a week or 10 days. So by the time you make demand on delivery, you should be getting it in about a week or 10 days. If it takes 90 days or 120, that tells you that there's something amiss here. Now, so far, nobody's panicked. I mean, everybody that's in the know, they want the physical paper. They're speculators. They're speculating on the various prices. They do not want physical delivery. They have confidence that there's plenty in the warehouse and everything is going to be fine. Now, there's an opportunity here, because at some point in time, this delivery is going to break down. And when it breaks down, then there's going to be some massive realignments in the metals markets, which both of them, that is gold and silver, are heavily manipulated. These are not free markets. The stock market isn't free. The metals market isn't free. Free market means that the supply and demand determines the price. That doesn't have anything to do with the markets around the world today. It's the president's plunge protection team. It is the Federal Reserve. It's the central banks of the various countries around the world that prop up these markets or sell off into them. And they can control the prices of gold and silver. For instance, if you took a look at the supply and demand of gold today, based upon its historic prices in the past and inflation, at least here in the United States, the price of gold should be at about $2,200 an ounce. It isn't. It's about $930. Now, because it's priced below its supply-demand ratio, tells you very plainly that it's being manipulated. It's being manipulated by puts and shorts and calls and longs. These are terms that are used in the marketplace to describe people buying and selling various grades of paper. And it affects the price of the gold or the silver or the copper or the platinum or whatever you're dealing in. And these markets are being controlled for the profit of the big banks. Big banks. In fact, all of the silver in the world, 85% of it anyway, is controlled by three banks. So what the Hunt brothers attempted to do back in the early 1980s has now been accomplished by the big Wall Street firms. Now, that doesn't mean that we ought not to buy gold and silver because it's being manipulated. I'm sitting here waiting for the manipulation to come to an end. And that comes to an end when there's a big break in the market. That occurred in 1980. This big break in the market is when they're unable to make delivery and or people get wind of the fact that the paper money is no good, like the Weimar Republic in 1923 in Germany or any of the great inflations that have occurred throughout history. And when people lose confidence in their paper, then they turn to precious metals. And then there will be a big run on it. And then the price doesn't go up to where it ought to be, $2,200. It goes up to double that. It goes way beyond what it should be. And then it falls back to whatever the marketplace really puts on it. That is the competitive marketplace. They call it the black market, but it's the free marketplace. Now, there's some profit to be made here, and we'll talk about that as we progress along. But in this History of Silver, Part 3, by Jeff Nielsen, he says, for nearly 5,000 years, the price ratio between gold and silver has averaged about 15 to 1. This number is very close to the 17 to 1 ratio, which represents the natural occurrence of the two elements in the Earth's crust. And it's interesting to note, however, that through most of history, the price ratio has favored silver. Now, in the last century, that ratio has rapidly, if unevenly, risen. And as of this moment, the gold price ratio is once again nearing 70 to 1. Given the historical data, the natural assumption to make is that the world must be practically overflowing with silver for the price ratio to have gotten this skewed. In fact, this could not be further from the truth. In this modern era of silver production, annual mine production now amounts to more than 600 million ounces per year. However, while industrial and investment demand for silver are soaring, production is leveling off. Annual production in 2008 increased production by 2%, despite the price of silver reaching its highest level in nearly 30 years. Annual production is almost certain to decline this year, while the ratio varies year to year. Roughly two-thirds of the silver that is mined is a byproduct of the mining for other metals, such as copper, lead, and zinc. Now, with these metals production dramatically reduced this year due to a temporary plunge in demand, it's virtually impossible for silver production to increase. Okay, so let's take a look at that and analyze it. If we take a look at gold, it also is a byproduct of copper and silver mining. But the gold is also mined directly, particularly in South Africa, where they have a number of gold mines. And South Africa, for many years, has been the world's number one producer of gold. It's no longer so. And gold production has been going down from 2,500 tons a year to about 2,000 tons a year. Silver production, two-thirds of it, comes out of copper mines, such as down in Chile, when they're mining for copper to get the copper to make radiators for automobiles. Two-thirds of what silver is being mined every year comes as a byproduct. Now, when copper production declines because people aren't buying automobiles because there's a depression, then there's also a two-thirds lesser production of silver. So silver production is going down at the same time that silver consumption is going up. And the silver consumption going up has been going up, up, up every year for the last 50 or 75 years, at least since World War II. We won't say 75, but the last 50. Since the end of World War II, silver consumption has been going steadily up because of industrial demand. Now, it's not only a precious metal used for money, used for saving, but it's also an industrial metal, whereas gold is not. So only about a third of the silver production in the world comes from silver mines, that is, people that are actually mining for the express purpose of finding silver. And generally speaking, silver doesn't appear as nuggets like gold does in stream beds, placer gold, but rather it's an ore, and it comes out of the ground, and it's a pretty expensive process to produce it. There has to be something there. Now, up in northern Idaho, there's a mine up there, and they produce silver. It's a silver mine. It's open and closed, depending upon the price of silver, which goes up and goes up and down. And that's because it's manipulated. And the reason that gold and silver prices are manipulated so closely by government is because if the free market were allowed to function, then the price of gold would be $2,200 an ounce, which would be a glaring proof that the paper is valueless. So in order for governments to get you to accept their paper, they have to suppress the price of gold and silver to give you the illusion that it's a relic of the barbaric past and that it's not worth very much, and therefore we should stick with paper. So far, it's worked very well. So you people just stick with your paper. That's fine by us. And we're sitting here stockpiling gold and silver as our savings. Instead of putting money in the bank in a 401k retirement program, people who are in the know concerning metals stock metals. And most people who stock metals take physical possession. That's 18% of us take physical possession and actually stock it. We've got it buried in a hole in the ground or in a safe deposit box or someplace, you know, over at Aunt Martha's or someplace. And then the 82% that the speculators are speculating on, these aren't people that are saving for the future. They're just buying and selling contracts to make money, like buying pork bellies or wheat futures or anything else. They're just buying and selling and trading. And as long as they're buying, selling, and trading in paper, nobody ever gets wind of the fact that the physical stocks have been dwindling now since the end of World War II. That is, the physical silver is constantly going down, down, down. Although the amount of silver that's being bought, sold, and traded is going up, 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 and production is relatively stable at about 600 million ounces a year, which is also being consumed. All right, now, in the modern era of silver production, annual mine production now amounts to 600 million ounces. Let me just take that 600 million here, 600, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and divide that by 32,000. It's 18,750 tons per year compared to 2,500 tons of gold. Now, annual production is almost certain to decline this year. And one of the unique aspects of gold as a commodity is that almost no gold is consumed. For example, it's not used up in any of the applications that we have for gold, either now or throughout past history. As a result, if a concerted effort were made, almost all of the gold that's ever been mined from day one could be collected and melted down into bullion. Now, there's been some losses. No doubt some people have hidden some gold someplace and then forgot where it was, and it's been lost. And some of it's been used in commercial applications and then not recovered. But as a general rule, you'll find that most of the gold is out there. Now, this is not the case with silver. Silver is not simply a much more versatile metal than gold. It is the single most versatile of all metals. And in recent years, there have been more new patents issued for products containing or using silver than for any other metal. Because of this amazing versatility, most of the so-called market experts, especially here in North America, have branded silver as an industrial metal, you know, similar to copper or steel. In a follow-up commentary in polyester and sportswear, the popularity of this material is soaring because silver's antibacterial properties dramatically reduce bacteria buildup on the skin, which dramatically reduces odor, since it is bacteria which actually create the odor when we sweat. Now, there's another aspect of silver which separates it from virtually all other commodities. In most of these countless industrial applications of silver, silver is used in trace amounts, amounts too small to be recovered. Referring to the previous example, 1,200 tons of silver each year are used in the clothing industry, 1,200 tons per year, to fabricate 20 million tons of polyester sportswear. Now, there are two huge important economic implications to be drawn from this fact. And one of these is that silver is being consumed. So if you took that 1,200 tons of silver that's being consumed in the manufacture of clothing, and you extrapolated that into the known amount of silver that's on hand in the various warehouses around the world, which is about a one-year supply, 600 million ounces, 18,750 tons, That would be a 16-year supply. So all of the silver that's available for sale today that we know about, that we know is in the warehouse, the 600 million ounces, would be consumed by just this one industry, the clothing industry, over the next 16 years, which silver has already been sold into the future on paper contracts 16 years into the future. So to show you how much silver has already been sold, if you take the 18,750 tons times 15 years, they've already sold 281,250 tons of silver that hasn't even been mined out of the ground yet. And you people are sitting out there with those pieces of paper. Now, to support that 281,000 tons of silver, to support that, there's approximately 18 tons of silver actually in the warehouses. Well, it's 18,000 tons. So let's just take 280 and divide that into 18. Let's see what the ratio is. 18,000. And we'll divide that by 281,000, which gives us about 0.064, which is not bad. There's about 6% of the silver that has already been sold on hand in the warehouse. So that, put another way, if everybody came in and presented their contracts and said, give me my silver, everybody could get 6.4%. That's it. That's all you're going to get. You'll have to stand in line and wait until it's being mined and then take your share a little at a time, you know. Now, there are some pigs like me, for instance, around here, and we say, well, wait a minute, I don't want to wait 16 years to get mine. So we've gone out and we took physical possession. Now, that's 18% of the people that are dealing now in silver. 18% of them, they actually go out and take physical possession of it and then put it, you know, over here someplace where they can set it aside and they know where it's at. And that's what we're suggesting that you think about doing here. If you're one of these that has the paper, you might want to reconsider that once you see these numbers. Now, if you take a look at the 70-to-1 ratio, 70-to-1, if you take a look at the price ratio, let's just round it off, there's about $15 an ounce for silver today, and it's selling for around $9.50 an ounce. So if you took $950 and you divided that by 15, the ratio would be 63-to-1. Well, the last time I took a look, I thought it was about 1250 and it was 930, and it came out to about 70-to-1. 70-to-1. The ratio should be 17-to-1. So you can see that the powers that be, the Wall Street banks and the Federal Reserve and the government, working together, the Treasury, they work in sync here, have actually created the illusion that there is just silver coming out everybody's earballs and we just don't know what to do with it all. Now, that's a deception, and it's a deception that doesn't affect 95% of Americans. Most Americans don't know what gold and silver is and don't care. So it only affects a few of us. Because here in America, 5% of us, 5% of the people of America, about 15 million people, control or have possession of 100% of all the gold and silver in the nation. So only 5%, 15 million people, have this gold and silver to start with. The other 285 million Americans aren't even in the game. So we're not concerned about them at all, and they're not concerned about gold and silver. And when this thing does turn upside down, they're going to be affected by it, by the inflation, by the prices. But it isn't directly affecting them. They don't have any money involved in it. Their money is in their 401ks. It's in their savings accounts. And Americans are now saving at a higher rate than they have for 20 years. I saw the numbers the other day. It's about 7%. Americans are taking their paychecks and saving 7% of it. And in what form are they saving it? Paper. At the very same time, the government is out here printing paper just as fast as they can to dilute the value of what paper they've got. So the average American is unable to understand inflation, unable to understand arithmetic, just simple arithmetic, that if you keep printing more and more money, it makes the money that's in circulation cheaper and cheaper, which is the engine that drives prices higher and higher. So, you know, there was a time, just going back in history a little ways, when I was a kid, you could buy a brand new Ford automobile for $1,600 in 1955. $1,600. Today, that same car is going to cost you $16,000, 10 times more. So you need to be making 10 times more than you were, say, in 1955. But in 1955, wages for a cat skinner were about $3 an hour. He'd have to be making $30 an hour today. So if he's making $30, well, then he's all right. If he's not, then typically we're losing ground to inflation, at least wages are, then we're not as well off today as we were then, which is why people want to buy gold and silver, that is, those people that are in the know, to protect their purchasing power. And we're going to talk about protecting your purchasing power and profiting off of this 70-to-1 ratio that's available in the marketplace when we come back. So hang on here and let's talk about giving you the mid-course reminder here to satisfy all of the FCCs and government bureaucracies around the world. And to let you know that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and a biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. And it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. And then finally, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the history of silver. I'm giving you a rundown here on where the silver and gold markets are today. A little current events here and a little history at the same time. Now, the guy that wrote this article here, his name is Jeff Nielsen. Probably a bigger, better, more all-encompassing source of information on silver will be from the Money Changer. The Money Changer. That's a guy named Franklin Sanders. I think if you went online, you could find the Money Changer. And he wrote a book, a manual, on arbitrage. It's the only guy that I know of that's ever done this. Arbitrage. Arbitrage is where you take advantage of the difference in price of a particular item, and you buy it at one time, or you buy it in one place, and then you turn around and you sell it right away in another. An example of that would be, let's say that the price of gold on the Tokyo Exchange is $938. And just for the sake of our discussion, let's suppose that the price of gold in San Francisco is $940. See, there's a $2 spread there. Well, if you had an account in Tokyo, and you called your broker in Tokyo and you say, hey, sell me 100 ounces of gold for $938. And your broker says, well, okay, Tom will do that. You're on $938. Okay, so now you've got 100 ounces of gold in Tokyo, right? All right. So now you turn around and you call your broker in San Francisco and you say, now, broker in San Francisco, I have 100 ounces of gold in Tokyo. And I want to sell that 100 ounces to you for the $940 that you're advertising there in San Francisco. And the broker in San Francisco says, well, yeah, I'll take that. I'll take that contract for $940. So you just bought it in Tokyo 5 minutes ago for $938. And let's say it's 1,000 ounces, you know, so take a number. Well, then you've just made a $2,000 profit, haven't you? Well, less commissions. See, there's going to be some commissions on this. So the spread has to be bigger than the commissions, but that's what arbitrage is all about. It's simply buying at a lower price and selling at a higher price. Now, it can work the other way around. I mean, you can buy the gold in London, in Tokyo for $938 and find out that the price suddenly dropped in San Francisco to $935. And you lost $3. I mean, it works both ways, but, you know, arbitrage is where you're trying to make a profit off of it. Now, the historic price of silver is 16 to 1. So when we see the value of silver and gold go to 16 to 1, which today it's at about 70 to 1, you know, 60 to 7, it's been running that range now for the last several months, since March anyway. We take a look at that and we say, well, the ratio went up. Now, I've been telling all of my listeners I expected the ratio to close from a low of about, I don't know, 45 to 1 here not too long ago, a few months ago, a year ago, to 16 to 1, and lo and behold, it went in the opposite direction. It went from 45, it went up to 70. So when it hit 60, I went out and bought some more silver. That's what I do. When I see the ratio up high here, I buy silver instead of gold. And that's because I'm expecting the gold-silver ratio to go down to 16 to 1. And so, and I'm not speculating. See, I'm an old man. I don't have the resources, and I don't have the, you know, I'm not a multimillionaire. I'm not a Donald Trump, and I'm just a, like you are. You got my savings, and I've got a choice to make. Should I store my savings in real estate? Should I store my savings in my 401k? Should I store my savings in $100 bills under the mattress? Or should I store my savings in copper, platinum, palladium, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, oil? You know what? How do you want to store your wealth? In your business, maybe. You know, a lot of people do that. Stocks, bonds. People buy stocks and bonds. So if you're listening to me, you know, you've got your savings tucked away in some kind of an investment, and you believe in that investment, or you wouldn't have your money there. I was talking to a guy the other day, and he said that his estate, his inheritance, is tied up in stocks and bonds, and his mother, who is in her 80s, and one of these days is expected to die, is going to leave the estate to the children, and the children are going to inherit all these stocks. But these stocks have gone down in value by 40%, you know, from 14,000 on the stock market here a year ago to, or two, a couple of years ago maybe now, down to 8,500 yesterday. And it's expected to go down to around 4,000. It's gonna drop another 50 or 60%. At least we're expecting it to. And so, where's that? What's that gonna do to his inheritance? Well, it's gonna make it substantially less. It isn't gonna wipe it out, but it's gonna go down by 80%. Now, in 1929, stocks dropped 89%, so you had 11% left over. Now, of course, most people would take a look at gold and silver and say, well, I'm not going to buy any of that stuff. I think that stuff is just, nonsense. Well, to each his own. I'm not here to persuade you to sell your stocks and buy gold. That's not my thing in life. I'm a reporter. I just report facts. And so if you've been taking notes here, you should have 21 facts that I've already related to you in this series. 21 facts. And then if you take those facts and then you run those through your brain, your computer, it should give you a conclusion. You take a look at this and you draw a conclusion. You say, well, what should I do? Stick with my 401k? Now that the president has put out another $29 trillion worth of money in circulation and guarantees, when that hits the marketplace, is that going to make my purchasing power and my 401k greater or lesser? Well, these are decisions that we all have to make. My conclusion from my computer is that it's going to make your purchasing power lesser. That the $1,600 you put into your 401k in 1955, if you look at it today, it has depreciated by about 10 times. If you take a look at the value of the American dollar compared to 1930 and today, it's lost 98% of its value. And the president has just tripled the amount of money. Well, it's 13 trillion. Let's see. He's doubled the money supply in the last year. In less than a year, the president and our Congress has doubled our money supply. So that should make the money that you had last year and the year before, and as this inflation and price increases on out into the future here, another 18 to 36 months, it should make your money worth about half as much. You're going to lose about half your purchasing power in your 401k or in your passbook savings account. That's what my computer is telling me. So I said, well, I don't think I want to store my savings there then. Now, in a world with twice as many people, now that's today. See, we had twice as many people today. And with an ever-increasing number of uses for silver, we have 90% less silver to divide among us. Now, how can this possibly make silver less precious? All right, now, I'm getting ahead of myself here, but I wanted to point out that there's 90% less silver available to us today than there was 50 years ago. Now, let me give you those numbers. Get your pencil out here, boys and girls, and write these down. Now, remember, one of these applications has been discussed by numerous precious metals commentators, myself included, and that is silver is being consumed literally. Thus, every year we permanently lose large amounts of silver, and permanently after the supply ratio between gold and silver. Polyester sportswear already consumes 1,200 tons of silver per year, which is 32,000 ounces per ton, works out to over 38 million ounces of silver that's permanently consumed every year in that one application alone. So to put this into context, there are supposedly 600 million ounces in total global inventories at this moment. That's a 16-year supply for just this one industrial application. And silver has already been sold out into the future, 600,000 ounces a year. Is that what it is here? Yeah, 38 million ounces of silver is permanently consumed every year in this one application. There's 600 million ounces that are in the warehouses total. Now, as I pointed out, in the silver market fundamentals distorted by bullion's ETFs, there is every reason to believe that this number grossly exaggerates the actual inventories, as will be evident by the end of this commentary. Silver's amazing versatility has not made it less precious. It is more precious. In other words, there's 2 billion ounces of gold for sale, but there's only 600 million ounces of silver for sale. And that's what they're telling us they've got. And they're 3 months behind on delivery of the April orders for physical delivery. That sends us a little shock, and it says, hey, wait a minute. I don't think that they've got 600 million ounces. That's what they're telling us they've got. Now, maybe they do. You know, but even if they do, let's see how much that is, 500 million ounces. There's only 25% as much silver for sale today as there is gold. And there's 17 times less gold in the Earth's crust than there is silver. Now, I reported to you the other day, there was a time in the 2nd century A.D. when the price in the Roman Empire, now, the price of gold and silver moved to 2 to 1. 2 to 1. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised, but what silver and gold, the ratio, for a short period of time until it reaches equilibrium, may go back to 2 or 3 or 5 to 1. It's done it in the past. Now, that's wild speculation. I'm not counting on that. When silver gets to 16 to 1, I'm going to sell my silver and turn it into gold. Now, let me just give you the numbers here so that you can see what happens here. Let's suppose that you've got the money to buy 10 ounces of gold. Now, the price of gold today is about $930. At least it was last night. $930. So, if you had $10,000... cash, you know, we call it cash, in Federal Reserve notes, and you went down to your gold broker, he would sell you 10 ounces of gold. All right, now you're in possession of 10 ounces. You can go put that in your savings. And you could be pretty confident that when the world's economies finally collapse, you know, which is sometime in the future, year, two, three, that the price of gold is going to go from $1,000 today to $2,000 or $3,000 or $5,000, whatever this inflated money is worth at that time, it's going to go up pretty dramatically. So if you wanted to save your purchasing power, if you save $10,000 in Federal Reserve notes and the collapse overtakes you, your purchasing power may go from $10,000 or 10 ounces of gold today down to maybe an ounce or two of gold at some time in the future. So you're going to lose purchasing power. So to preserve that purchasing power, you get rid of the paper today and you put it into some tangible like gold. Now you got 10 ounces. But is gold the better way to hold your savings? Is there a better way? Is there a more profitable? And we think the answer to that is yes, and that silver is much more, has much more leverage potential than does gold. So while the price of gold will probably double from $1,000 to $2,000 an ounce, and we're all pretty confident that's going to happen at some point in time through inflation, what would happen if you took that same 10 ounces of gold today and you bought silver? Well, the answer is you'd get 700 ounces of silver. Now take your 700 ounces of silver home and bury it in a hole in the ground. And then ask yourself, well, what difference does it make to you whether you save your savings in $100 bills in the mattress, save your savings in your 401k, or you save it in gold or silver or something else? And the answer is, it's the purchasing power that we're trying to preserve. And if possible, we would like to increase. Now, if you have $10,000 in cash in the bank right now today, inflation is running at the rate of 13%. It's true, your house is going down in value, but you go to the grocery store and prices are going up. So the government is printing more money, and they're actually inflating the currency. There's been no deflation at all. Prices are going up at 13% a year. Next year, it's going to cost you 13% more to buy a loaf of bread or a pound of cherries. That's the way it was last year and the year before, and that's kind of what we're expecting next year. So you're going to lose $1,300 out of your $10,000. But if you put your money into, let's say, wheat. Now, wheat and corn have been going up in price, as has been soybeans. And I would expect that wheat, corn, and soybeans are probably going to be more expensive next year. So that might be a good way for you to store your wealth. But $100 bills under the mattress is probably going to be a loser, and your 401k is probably going to be a loser. So if you take a look at gold, now the last year gold increased by 5%, and so far this year it's increased by 5%. And at some point in time we think it's going to double in price, but we don't know exactly when. Over the last 7 or 8 years it's gone from $257 to $938, so $250, $750, nearly, it's gone nearly four times, almost. Could we expect a four times increase over the next 7 or 8 years in the gold-silver ratio? And the answer to that is yes. Because in 1980, which was the last time the gold-silver ratio went to 16 to 1. It did it in 10 days. And in that period of time, you could take your silver in and trade it for gold, and at 70 to 1 to 16 to 1, the profit is 400%. So the answer is, you take 10 ounces of gold into the broker and you set it on the counter. He gives you 700 ounces of silver. You take the 700 ounces of silver home, and that's your savings. When the price ratio drops to 16 to 1, you take your 700 ounces of silver into the broker and put it on the counter and say, give me gold. And he will give you 40 ounces of gold. So you will have taken your $10,000 in Federal Reserve notes and converted it to gold, then converted the gold to silver, then converted the silver back to gold, and you'll have four times as much. That's called arbitrage. Arbitrage. And the guy that does the best job is Franklin Sanders at the Money Changer. You should ask for his book, Why Silver Will Outperform Gold by 400%. I don't know what the price is on the book, but you need that book. And that'll give you a detailed analysis of arbitrage. Meanwhile, I'm running out of time, so I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Remember, we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.